Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Yeah, hello and welcome to the EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. My name is Bernhard Steinhoff and I'm the medical director of the Cork Epilepsy Center in Germany and currently co-chair of the scientific panel Epilepsy of the EAN. This month's topic is epilepsy, new diagnostic and therapeutic EEG and neurostimulation approaches. And in today's first episode, we will talk about the new developments of long and ultra-long EEG in epilepsy because they're fascinating new aspects concerning the EEG technology. My guest, and the perfect guest for that, and extremely experienced expert, is Andreas Schulze-Bonhage. My friend and colleague is the head of the Freiburg Epilepsy Center at the University of Freiburg in Germany. Yeah, welcome, Andreas, and thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you very much for the invitation. It's a great pleasure to be here and to discuss these issues with you.
I think it's also fascinating because both of us were, of course, working with EEG for 80% of our lifetime to have a focus on EEG. But I would like to start, if you could give us an update about, the development, like a historical overview, a development of EEG over the last decades until we approach the new and fascinating aspects we are touching today.
Well, I mean, there have been many improvements of the EEG since the original two-channel recordings that we had from Hans Berger. And I mean, many of these progress aspects were made yet in the analog area with increasing the numbers of channels of EEG to cover better the brain activity of the brain to get a more complete picture of this. But a lot has happened really since the digitization of EEG has happened. So this has allowed us to not only improve the visual diagnosis, which is, of course, one aspect. So you can reform it, you can look at different amplifier settings, you can look with different filters. So you can really improve the sensitivity of detection of abnormalities. But it's also beyond that. So the digitization has also allowed to really apply computer programs to the analysis of the EEG. And that means that you can really save time. You can detect events automatically. You can things like reformatting, like source localization. So you can do many things with the EEG which hadn't been possible before. And you can also easily extend the range of recordings. So, for example, including very slow potentials and very high frequency potentials, which are very important for epilepsy diagnostics nowadays, particularly if you perform intracranial recordings. So there's really a wide spectrum, including new biomarkers, particularly applied for the intracranial EEG that we have. So, for example, high frequency oscillations. So there is really an ongoing development yet in many of these aspects, and it has probably really changed a lot the use and increased the use, and we will cover some aspects of long-term recordings later.
Yeah, wonderful. That's really fascinating. And you spoke about, which is really fascinating for me and for you also, I know that, is this topic you covered with biomarkers and high-frequency oscillations. How far are we with the high-frequency oscillations? Is it mandatory nowadays to record them?
I think modern EEG systems allow to record at a wide spectrum of frequencies, including high frequency oscillations, which are normally defined from 80 to 500 hertz. So it is possible, and probably most centers using modern hardware do it now. The question is, what information do we additionally get? And it's not so easy to interpret these data. So there are some specialist centers like Montreal where everything originated, but also many other centers who do now use it in addition to what we have from inter-ictal spikes and from ictal electrographic patterns and have it as something intermediate between this. So giving additional evidence for areas which are of high interest in terms of epileptogenicity. On the other hand, we are not yet quite convinced how we have to integrate that into our pre-surgical decisions. So in really defining the area, for example, which have to be resected for epilepsy surgery or which should be stimulated by neuromodulatory devices. So I think we are yet in an intermediate stage where we are gathering this evidence. There is the idea that HFO or high-frequency discharges in the gamma band also are just additional markers which can help to better define areas, but the evidence that this really improves outcomes has yet to be provided.
Let's go back to the basics, because this session of today is also for neurologists in general practice or in general neurological hospitals. And we are all both aware of the advantages of the digital EEG techniques. What would you say? What are the minimum requirements for long-term recordings, for better digitalized EEG recordings today, the minimum requirements?
Well, I mean, if we speak about long-term recordings, we normally mean recordings which are far beyond what we normally have as in our routine EEG recordings. So it would be normally 24 hours or more, so maybe in the range of 1 to 2 weeks, which we perform in our hospitals. And for these recording settings, on the one hand, we need a certain number of EEG channels if we want to extract some localizing information. So there is the general standard of the 1020 system. And there is lots of evidence that if we add some more electrodes, either in the subtemporal regions, which are very often interesting for epileptic discharges because temporal lobes are concerned, but also maybe in areas of particular interest. So if we have a hypothesis where epileptic activity could arise from, so including such additional context really improves our sensitivity and also the vocalizing value of the information that we obtain. So certainly the minimum standard has remained the 1020 system, but the options that we now have are really far beyond this. And there are a number of parameters, of course, like sampling frequency, which should be probably today at least in the range of 512 hertz, maybe in the range of 1,024 hertz. And so in order to really allow to cover the whole spectrum and also to have lower frequencies included, so to have an amplifier which is a high performance in that respect, to also be able to analyze these data. So I think most systems that are now on the market really provide these options, and it's very rare that it's really a matter of hardware. So it's more the question that we need people really performing the recordings and doing the analysis.
That is very true. And we need those qualified people, of course, and those interested people. And that is also a minimum requirement. I totally agree. But, you know, the long-term recordings we're usually doing in your hospital, in our hospitals, are long-term video EEG recordings for a couple of days or sometimes for 1 or 2 weeks, both with surface and with intracranial electrodes, especially in pre-surgical diagnostics. So we are speaking about inpatients for 1 or 2 weeks. But now we are speaking about something called ultra-long EEG. And as far as I understand, here we have a possibility to record outpatients for weeks, for months, which is really fascinating. Can you tell us something about that new development?
Yes, I think there is growing awareness that there is additional information that we can obtain if we leave the hospital and if we really go into real-life situations of patients. And so a number of efforts have been made to improve ambulatory EEG, which is in a way that is not non-stigmatizing, so that you don't wear really a big head with 24 or more electrodes. So some devices allow now to do these recordings for a number of days in an ambulatory sessions. That would be, for example, in-ear electrodes or electrodes integrated into wearable devices. They have quite a yield and they just allow us to do some investigations, for example, on the cause of generalized epilepsies or on strictly focal epilepsies in certain regions, which we know, for a period of, say 3 to 5 days out of hospital. And this is also possible now with some setups which allow to do video EEG monitoring at home. But the ultra-long recordings really require EEG. We speak of this if it's a matter of months or even years. And this has become feasible now with electrodes which are implanted subcutaneously, so that we obtain really recordings over many, many months. And it is fascinating to see that these recordings are very limited in spatial coverage, but they have a very high quality. And you can really do analytics which haven't been possible at all so far. So these long-term recordings require that the patients regularly download the data and transfer it to cloud systems where you then can look them at them and analyze them automatically and visually. And surprisingly, at least in our experience, and we have now 19 patients going with subcutaneous EEG long-term recordings, most of them have more than 90% continuous recordings over a period of a year. So this is something we never had had before. And it allows to address really different and new clinical questions. So this ranges from sleep quality to the real occurrence of seizures, the differentiation, is it epileptic, is it non-epileptic, to objectively assess outcomes from treatments, which has been so far only limited to seizure diaries, which really greatly differ from this, and to assess underreporting, overreporting, circadian rhythms. So there are many, many aspects, including even medical legal decisions, which can change if you use such devices.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And you have 19 patients, you mentioned that, and the systems are apparently working. But we were speaking previously about the staff, about the qualified staff who is necessary to do all the work. And I see myself sitting at my desk looking at a six-month EEG of an outpatient. How can we do that? Is it possible by humans, or do we need artificial intelligence for that? Or even more, in 10 years' time, does artificial intelligence replace the humans?
Well, that's a very good question. So I think there are very dedicated people like yourself who probably wouldn't mind sitting each evening as few hours reading ultra-long recordings. But there are other doctors who are not totally dedicated to EEG reading. And I think the standard system is now that you have some detection algorithms which reduce the amount of EEG to be reviewed by the human interpreter. And with the system that is now available for subcutaneous recordings, which is covering three channels of EEG, more or less continuously, it takes about half an hour to read 1 month of EEG. So this is not nothing, but it is certainly a lot less than if you would do it only visually. So there's a lot of reduction in the time of processing by automated algorithms. On the other hand, one has to say that the specificity of these detections is not yet at a level which would allow to replace the human reviewer. So there are often artifacts which are considered to be potentially epileptic. And it's not even for the visual experienced reader always very easy to distinguish this. So it takes some time. And yeah, we have to see if this can really completely be replaced. So there is now AI-guided EEG analytic systems coming to the market, which at least in some clinical trials seem to be at the same level with a standard neurologist reading the EEG. I'm not so sure if this applies also to experienced epileptologists yet, but certainly there is a development which can improve the situation if you want to use this broadly. So, I mean, certainly in the epilepsy centers, you have dedicated people, very experienced in reading, which probably can better distinguish subclinical patterns from clinical patterns and from artifacts. But if you look at a broad application of such devices, you have to trust also more and more on automated and AI-guided ways of analytics. And I think we have to see this during the next years to come, if it's really feasible to replace the human reviewer more and more. I think my hospital administration would be happy to see that. I am a little bit skeptical at this time that this completely replaces it, but for easy recordings, it's probably for standard routine EEGs. It may be at a step where we get close to what a visual analysis can provide.
So great. Thank you very much for this answer. And looking at the clock, this is such an interesting conversation we have here, but I think we have to come to an end of our episode of today. What would be the take-home message concerning the development of EEG for all our colleagues, for the million, hopefully millions of colleagues who are listening to us right now concerning EEG?
I think we have improvements, particularly using digital systems, which really allows to easily use EEG for interpretation, which helps to be more specific, which not only helps the specialists in the hospitals where we have lots of new application, but which probably with the ultra long-term EEG monitoring will really change our landscape, because we have relied a lot on seizure diaries only, and I think this is highly questionable. We know that many patients are not able to correctly document their seizures. So I think we will have a new era where we have really objective data on seizures occurring in our patients. And so I'm very optimistic that this will really change the life of the doctors and of the patients, probably. And hopefully AI will take some of the workload away, which additionally arises here.
So thank you very much for this take-home message, and I hope the audience understood that EEG is still a fascinating and ongoing and important topic in neurology. So this was our first episode. Next episode will be about neurostimulation in epilepsy treatment. Well, Andreas, you would be the perfect expert for that as well. But as far as I know, Christel Funk will take over for this episode, and I'm looking forward to that one. So again, thank you so much for this commitment and this conversation we had during our first episode in our EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. And bye-bye, take care, and see you soon, Andreas.
Was a pleasure. Thank you.
This has been EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. /membership. Thanks for listening. EANcast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.